MB, welcome back to the Waterski Pro Tour podcast. I'm so excited to talk to you about this tournament because you were there on site, on the shoreline, watching, experiencing it. How was it? Give me the first overall overarching picture of how the tournament was.
Oh, it was good, man. Thanks for having me. It was fun to be there. It's fun to always have a tournament in California. It's a long ways out here, so to get everybody out here is quite a haul, quite a heavy lift. So to see the scores be as high as they were and as good as they were, and the stoke was pretty high, I think it's a win. Yeah, the weather was great. Conditions were perfect. And like I said, I was actually supposed to sit down with one of the pro women for this, and the weekend was so busy that there's never a chance. So it was kind of nonstop. And so we're doing this anyway, because this is better, I think. I get to see your face, well, and I get to ask you about your foot. Your foot's good, it's healing?
Yeah, allegedly in the cast is healing.
Okay.
When we open in 9 days, we'll see how it's doing.
Okay.
Look, before we go into the details, obviously California Pro-Am is a tournament with a long history. So I know that you can speak to that history better than I can. I mean, it's a tournament that has basically, in my view, established the head-to-head format in the last, you know, what we now all see in various other tournaments. They were always very strong with that format from the beginning. Tournament changed site a couple of times, but it's been around for, I don't know, 20 years?
21 years. This year.
It wasn't far off.
Yeah, it can. Okay. It's of drinking age in America now, the California Pro-Am. Right. But yeah, it's been a phenomenal event. I mean, I skied some of those first events back Greg Bedell's place in over in Brentwood, and those were awesome. You know, we saw Will Asher run 41 back in the day. We saw Karina Nolan run 39 back in the day. So
yeah,
it's got a long pedigree, and it's been to a few different places. It's kind of landed at Shoreline Lake, Elk Grove, and I think it's a beautiful site for it. So the scores really did reflect how insane this place skis, and how well they have it dialed for showtime. I don't know if you want to get right into it, but I mean,
yeah, let's get into it. Starting with the women, I mean, and before we get there, is it still average of two rounds to qualify, or is it now best of the two?
It was best of either round, I believe.
Okay.
So it wasn't
historically they've been right.
Yeah, historically, think about this. It's like it's essentially the average of your two rounds in the past, and that gets very dicey because if you go out as a woman and you miss 35 off or something, just kind of have like a whatever, now you can't just like go out and ski well enough in the second round. You have to like over ski that second round to be able to get your average all the way up. And we've seen that in the past where, you know, one of the pro men would miss 38 off, and that's kind of it. So you had to be consistent this year. Either way, it wouldn't have mattered because everybody was super consistent, but it was the best of either round top eight scores going to the head-to-head final.
Yeah, so I have the scores of the women in front of me in the two rounds. First thing that jumped out at me was that Regina was the only one running 39 off in the first in the preliminary stages. How did she look in the prelims and maybe even in general in the during the weekend?
Regina looks strong. She looks like Regina on the ski again. I talked to her briefly, and she mentioned that now, with her knee, it's been like 2.5 years since her yep. knee reconstruction, ACL repair, and I'm sure some other stuff. And she's just now noticing that she's making movements in training, you know, off the water, where she's not thinking about her knee. So, you know, we saw her in the jump event here as well. Didn't go probably as far as she wanted to, but still she seems like she's back. And so it kind of showed on the slalom ski. And that first round, 2:41, it was pretty early. Not going to lie. It was like started at 8, and that's a little early for pro skiing, I think, just to be like on your game. But the women struggled through it, you know, and Witt and Jamie both got fives and almost took the pass down. So, and then some of the other girls did well. Chelsea, 3:39, Allie, 2.5, and Hannah almost ran 38 that first round. So some good skiing.
Yeah. Especially, you know, like, the two scores that I had my attention on, were obviously Janina and Hannah, because in my estimation, they are the top contenders for the overall in a few weeks at the Worlds. Yeah. So to see them going deep 38 is obviously, you know, it gives you a little snippet into what middle of October might reserve for us.
Yeah, exactly.
And then obviously the other thing that I saw, which I've been even happier to see more and more often, is Neelie Ross at pro slalom events. And she made the final two here in California.
Yeah, I know. She didn't do as well that first round. She was just kind of trying to feel the lake out. Mm-hmm. But that second round, I don't know if you saw, but the second round, she had 39 going. In the second round, she got three, but she had a killer start and just kind of like, I don't know, maybe just kind of just woke up and was like, damn, this is 39. And then that was it. It was over. You know what I mean? But mm-hmm. I'm imagining that a start like that at 39 in practice, she's run plenty of those. And that was interesting to see. Like, she's got potential to take it all the way down. So that's cool.
Yeah, no, I would say that. And I saw her here in Roquebrune at the Monaco Slalom Cup, because she skied that slalom pro event and she looked really solid throughout the whole day. It was a one-day tournament. But no, good to see her doing more pro slalom tournaments. It's good.
Yep.
So those were the things that stuck with me from the women's prelims.
The second round, Regina ran 39 again. She was the only girl to do that. So 1.5 of 41 yep. in that second round as well. So
that's right. Yeah. So she did. Not only was she the only one running 39, she didn't miss 39 in the prelims.
Exactly.
Let's jump to the men. So first round, Freddie 6:41, no continuation, or what happened there?
Yeah, dude. If you go back and watch the replay, apparently I had a curse word in there because I was on the microphone for that. But I didn't mean to. He turned the replay is, excuse me. The replay on Freddie's 41 in the first round was pretty much like, okay, one, okay, two, a little slow at three, because that was the score to beat, right? So he wasn't going to just like fall at three, pull all right. the way to four. And when he turned four, he literally almost grabbed the buoy anchor with his elbow and his ear was in the water. And it happened so quick that you couldn't see it, but I saw it with my own eyes. I don't even know if the webcast cameras are quick enough. And then he hung on to it. And for me, I'm like, okay, that's superhuman. But he didn't just hang on to it. Then he proceeded to try to turn five at 41. And that's when I think I was like, what the hell is this? Like, nobody does that. And then he got around six. And then he decided try not to like break the rope out the exit gates.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But that was insane. That was probably the highlight. Nate worked his way down 39 or 41, sorry. And he probably could have got six, no continuation, but he was literally would have been on the platform. And then, And then Will was just kind of like, all right, let's get past this three mark, because there was six people, one, two, three, six people stacked up. Steven, Joel Poland, Joel Howley, John Travers, T-Gas, Corey Vaughn, all stacked up at 3:41. So literally 3:41 got you ninth place as of the first round. Cole McCormick got 2.5.
But that has been the trend this year, right? That has been the trend this year. You know, there have been so many tournaments where like people with 3:41 don't make it in the final, like due to backup score, due to, you know.
Yeah, for sure. But out of 19 guys, only two missed 39. So you have Dane with one, Terry with 1.5, Robert Hazelwood 1.5, Charlie Ross 1.5, Ryan Canepa 2, Parrish 2, Parsons 2.5, Cole 2.5. Those are big names. And none of those guys got to three, but they all ran 39. So that's insane. That's insane to me. So
That to me is, I mean, we might get it towards the end, but like this is like the story of men's slalom for 2023. Two doesn't get you in the final anymore.
No, exactly. Know? Exactly.
So, you know, and then obviously the highlight maybe for me, at least for the men's slalom prelim, was the runoff, right? So there were three guys, namely Joel Poland. I think it was Corey Vaughn.
Yep.
And Steven Nevue,
yep.
Who had all three had a three in the first round and a 2.5 in the second round.
Yep.
So it was a three skiers runoff for two spots.
Yep. Joel Poland goes out first.
Yeah.
He overturned one and he did a side slide at two. I know he's doing side slides on jumpers right now, but he did a side slide on a slalom ski and hung on to it at two at 39 cold. And that was it, though. He couldn't get to three. And then Steven came out, just absolutely crushes 39, gets three at 41, you know, and this is a three-way runoff for two spots. So Corey comes out. He knows he has to get a piece of three, and he does that. And so Corey and Steven advance to the head-to-head final.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was the men's prelim. Let's jump into the head-to-head of the women. So from what I see here, Regina versus Janina. Janina 3 at 38, and Regina advances with 3 at 39. Chelsea Mills versus Neely Ross. About a pass difference as well. So 2.5 at 38 versus 2.5 at 39. Chelsea goes through. And then we have, let's see, Jamie Bull, 1.5 at 41 in that first bracket against Karen Trulov, who managed 2 at 39. And then looks like the closest one was Whitney 2.5 at 39, and Ali got 3 at 39.
Yeah, that was a bit of an upset. I mean, Whitney, she's been skiing really well all year. She looked good the first two rounds. And then the head-to-head, she looked even better. And at three, just kind of, I don't really know what happened, just kind of fell to the inside a little much, had a little bit too hard of a turn, and I think it might have surprised her because she didn't hang on to it. She got pulled out the front. And so Allie was second. And she knew all she needed was three, and she got it.
Yeah. Yeah. So Allie goes through, which Allie, you know, she won the San Gervasio Prime here, showing, I would say, that in, you know, tournament, high pressure tournament situations like a head to head, where it's a lot of skiing and you have, you know, a score to beat consistently throughout the day, she can perform. I mean, I don't know if you recall, like here she was versus, like against Mano in the semifinal, Mano does a four and she has to top that, gets a 4.5. So Ali is obviously very strong in
this year
scenarios.
This year especially.
This year in general.
She came on so strong this year. Probably like most improved skier of the year, I would say. And it's cool to see her still like, you know, battling 3:39 when she needed it.
Yeah, ran 39 a few times this year, first time in Caiaphas. No, so I would say MVP, as of now, Ali is a
big contender.
Big contenders.
Yep.
Yeah, big contender. So staying with her, she found fellow teammate, syndicate teammate Jamie Bull in the semis. And here Jamie had the better, like she ended up on top with 5 at 39, whereas Ali got another 3 at 39. And on the other side of the bracket, I see a 2.5 at 39 from Chelsea and another 1.5 at 41 from Regina.
Yep, she's just had 39 lockdown all weekend. So
looks
Chelsea looked good, but she wasn't looking completely on her game. I think she's still fighting back from that ankle injury at Swiss, you know, in May. And but she's here. She showed up. She got through 38 every round, so
made it to the semis.
Yeah. So, yeah, we had Regina and Jamie in the finals. And Jamie had just run 39, you know, a round or two before. And so you kind of guess, like, all right, pressure's on. Anything can happen. But yeah, she's just not quite there. There's a lot of skis breaking. I know, I think – maybe I'm wrong, but maybe Dane had an issue recently. I don't know. I think Cole might have had an issue recently. I mean, you got to understand, these skiers aren't doing what every other skier is doing. This is not normal skiing happening. This is like high-end elite skiing. They're pushing on the ski as hard as possible when they need to, when they can. And so, yeah, things like that are going to happen. But with Jamie, not making excuses, but I have inside information. She came back from Europe where she did great. Maybe some of the best skiing of her life. And her Works O2, Syndicate Works O2, was broken in half by the airlines conveniently. So she's been working back on a different ski, and I think that might still be a bit of a factor. But anyway, she goes out.
Yeah, and I mean, still she's there. She's
there.
She's right at the heels, right?
Yeah. So Regina runs. Jamie runs 5 at 39, and Regina runs it and takes the win. So, yeah, unreal skiing from Regina.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, and especially considering that we hadn't seen Regina at a pro tournament in a few months, because traditionally she doesn't make it this way due to work.
And, yeah, late 38.
Yeah, so just see her coming through and dominating, basically, like she did.
Yes,
it was, you know, not a surprise, but you know, you spend a few months away from high level skiing, that can have an effect, you know, on anyone, no matter the level. But it seemed like it didn't really have an effect on Regina.
No, dude, she's been doing this for longer than most of her competitors have been alive, so she's got this on lockdown. You know, you can be assured of that.
Yep.
Mentally, emotionally, she knows what she needs to do, and she goes out and does it.
Yep. And there's a few other of these guys that look, switching to the men's slalom head to head. Like, there are some of these guys right now that seem like locked in, able to just get it done on the day. One of them, obviously, the guy that ended up on top, which is Nate, who, you know, this tournament has been a little tricky to him in the past. I remember 2 years ago, lost in the first round of head-to-head versus Tigas. But it seemed like this weekend, like Nate often does, he just keeps improving throughout the weekend.
Yeah.
Starts skiing well, which for anybody else is exceptional, and then he just gets better the more times he puts his bindings on, you know. So
yes, that seemed
to be the case this weekend too.
That's what kind of champions do. You basically build progressively into the later rounds or the finals, and you don't really try to win the whole event in the first round or the second round. You know, you realize, all right, this is a long game. There's going to be 3, 4, 5 rounds, and I need to be able to be skiing my best in that last round. So that's kind of how Nate does it.
Yeah. Starting from the first round of the head-to-head, where looks like Steven Neveu, shockingly, I would say, missed 39. That's not something we're used to see from him. And Nate just ran the 6 at 39 and brought it to the dock.
Yeah. We had Will. Will and Joel. That was a bit of a surprise, because Will had been getting fours, and then he just kind of like was almost too early at 2 at 41 and just kind of fell in and couldn't hang on to it. It was crazy. And so Joel, being a lefty, that made that easy at 41 just to get a full 2.
Yeah, 1.5 is not a score we see from Will. You know, not typical. But yeah, Joel then gets the 2 and a bit of an upset makes it through. And then I don't know about Dane and Thomas. Was Thomas before Dane, or did Dane ski first? I can't remember how did that one that one went.
I don't remember the order. I feel like Dane went first. I could be wrong.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. Dane went first, 2.5, and then Tigas played the Tigas move and got his 3 and advanced. And
we could be right. We could be wrong too, but we could be right. I couldn't remember that exact matchup. And then, yeah,
I have the feeling he was first. Yeah.
And then Corey and Freddie. And of course, Freddie runs 39, and it's, you know, Corey had a big weekend, but it's like Steven, like, looked solid. And then in the head to head, things are a little different. And I did hear, this could be wrong, But I did hear after the first pass that there may have been a little bit of sprain down at the other end, maybe a little bit of, like, you know, one skier coming up and maybe spraying the other skier as they drop into the lake, which, hell yeah, I'll do that. But I think, you know, maybe Corey was working on spray trajectories a little bit more than working on headspace. But no, I'm making stuff up. Corey's dialed on headspace. He knows what he wants to do. He's balanced. He's got ski school. He's got a kid now. He's got a family. So he's very calculated. It's just hard to go out and run 39 every round. And yeah, that's what we saw.
That's the challenge of a head-to-head format. Like, when you make it through, you got to keep delivering over and over and over. And
Freddie and Thomas.
Freddie and Thomas.
Yeah.
So here I feel, I'm pretty sure Freddie went first, ran 3, right?
I believe so. And then T-Gas is always good for 3. And I just didn't think he got the gate that he needed. And, you know, that's it. It's 41 off. He's one of the older guys too, out there skiing round after round. That's 4 rounds in 2 days, but big rounds and 2 back to back. So, you know,
right.
And he ran through 39 every round. So it's insane skiing.
But then again, it's context, right? Second skier has to beat first. So thing is to go out and run 3, which you can do basically without a gate. Another thing is to get out of 3 and get a piece of 4, which he had to do since Freddie did 3 before him. So,
but I've seen him do that. I've seen him do that this year. You know, the old T-Gas from 10 years ago, 3 all day. The new T-Gas, even though he's older, but the newer T-Gas,
he can get
to 4. He's doing that more often than I've seen. And so I kind of was like, all right, we're on. But I think he tried to run the whole pass at 1, and that just doesn't work out sometimes.
No, especially if you're, you know, sometimes pushed to that extent, knowing that you have to get to 4.
For sure.
As a second seed. And then we got Nate versus Joel Howley. And I got to say, like, Nate goes out 5.
Yep.
And Joel tried. I mean, it's not that he skied. He wasn't leaving anything behind.
No, he was
like,
going
he really
for it.
Tried to run that pass.
Good old Aussie try. Yeah, he was serious about it. He's like, you know what? My goal's been to run 41. I might as well do it in this head-to-head right here. And that's what it looked like he was going to do. And it just didn't pan out. But still, phenomenal skiing. I mean, 2.5. We're like 2.5. You know, not good enough. Not nearly good enough. But really, damn, 2.5. So
yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so then we get to... Yeah. So that, by the way, as context, because Joel's losing score was higher than T-Gas's losing score, then Joel ended up 3rd.
Yep.
And then we have Nate versus Freddie. Bit of a modern-day classic final.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I think Freddie went out first on this one, I believe. And... it just didn't obviously get the same start he got when he got to 6, but also it wasn't that bad of a start either. And unfortunately, you know, from my perspective, skiers who turn with a lot of ski in the water on the offside are more prone to blowing the tail out than skiers who maybe turn a little bit more from the tail. I know it's kind of controversial, but I've been talking about that for a while now. And you see Freddie, he's been working on, he's been turning more from the tail, and it's been working. And just unfortunately, he got pulled forward at 3, tip engaged, tail blue, game over. Nate knows what he has to do, and he just goes out and does it. So that's kind of how the final went from my perspective.
Yeah, which, you know, like maybe not the climax we were all expecting watching, even like on the webcast. Hey, you do what you have to do to win at the end of the day, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So then just a bit of context as far as the tour goes. After this slalom tournament, basically a couple of shakeups, right? So Jamie regains the leaderboard, the top of the leaderboard with 227 points ahead of Whitney with 207 And then in third place, Ali Nicholson maintains her third place with 205. But obviously, as Regina starts piling up sub events, she's going to be climbing up. And she did, obviously, this weekend, sitting currently in fourth with 163. And then no major changes in position in the top five in the men. So we have Nate Smith at 262, Freddie Winter at 243, Will Asher at 171, Tigas at 155, and Dane Meckler in fifth with 108. So that's the slalom. But California Pro-Am for the last couple of years hasn't been slalom only, Marcus. It's been jump as well.
Yeah.
So let's go to the jump event. And just hot from your mind, what stood out before we go into the details?
Yeah, I mean, Augustina took a couple bad crashes, but she did come back after the first one. But that's still like, it's tough. It's tough to see. The girls have been taking a beating, and so I don't know. It was a bummer to see that, but. I hope she's okay. I hope she comes back strong. And obviously, you know, Regina, who's been through that, she was there. She actually impressively in the prelims 158, in the finals 162. That's insane. She's like almost 40 years old and she's still jumping that far. So that was really cool. And then on the men's side, Freddy Krueger going 237. And Joel Poland going 235 in the prelims was probably the highlight for me because, you know, I'm kind of getting old a little bit and Freddie's getting a little older than I am and he's still doing that. That's insane. I don't really know what's going on in his head. You know, when you talk to him, he's smiley, he's happy, he's jovial. He's not letting on that there's anything wrong with him at all. He's acting like he's 25 when you're talking to him, but you know, he's not, but anyway. And then Joel to go 235. I think it's his first jump over 230, and I think it's 229. Maybe was his previous best. So 6 foot PB is quite insane, almost 2 meters.
It's the second European ever going over 70 meters, and this is a new British jump record. Which, if you think about the names, you know. From Great Britain that jumped, like Jason Seals, Tom Asher, Damien Sharman, like having the British national record in jump is a big, big deal. And he has it now.
Yep.
So, you know, to me, the thing that stood out for me is Hannah's dominance, right? She was leading by 3 meters or almost 4 meters in the prelims. And won this thing by almost 7 meters in the finals. That's like, what, 21 feet?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big gap, you know?
She's on a different level right now, you know? And, I mean, I know Hannah a little bit. She seems like she's a very sweet woman, but when you see her on site, she's kind of like a robot. She's got her approach dialed and she's just not going to get distracted. You know what I mean? But I think that's also like why we see these results, you know, like 183 and then 188 in the finals, because she's got a goal and she's not going to back down. And I don't really know what that goal is, but you can see looking at these numbers that maybe she wants to be another woman to go for 200 feet, you know?
For sure. I mean, that's what I was going to say. Like, she's trying to chase what's possible, which obviously Jacinta in the last few years redefined that definition.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah.
It's
cool to see. I'm hoping that, I mean, there's a couple more events left for women's jump. And, you know, the Worlds is going to be a big one. So, exciting to see what happens.
Yeah. And then the other thing that stood out to me, but I'll ask you because obviously I wasn't there. It seemed like the two winners, so Ryan and Hannah, were kind of the only ones improving from prelim to final. So were the conditions worse in the final, or was it just, you know, a mental thing of like pushing and not getting the ride out that they wanted? Or
the conditions looked pretty much identical to me, you know.
Okay.
maybe the wind was just a little different, but honestly, I think, you know, when you're sneaking up on something, it's kind of almost easier to keep forward momentum. Whereas when you blow it out of the water, maybe like, or you just kind of like connect in the first round, then you're like, maybe you let down a little bit. I don't know. I don't know what happened to Freddie or Joel. Taylor was a foot shorter. Taylor, 222 in the prelims, not bad jumping. I know he's got his eyes on other things right now. He's not fully focused on jumping or skiing for that matter. But yeah, I think that, who knows? I mean, it's jump, man. You get three tries. That's really hard. It's like anything could go wrong, you know. So these guys, these guys and girls are insane for what they're doing. And hopefully people start seeing how insane they are. Because, Freddie and Ryan were only, you know, a couple tenths of a meter off each other. So that was close.
Yeah, for
sure. That was really close.
Reminiscent of like good old, you know, maybe, you know, 2016, 2015, and a bunch of other years where they were just inches away from each other all the time. Looks like this time, you know, like Ryan, who jumped a little less than Freddie and Joel in the prelim, booted a big one, and the other two tried to chase. And it didn't work for them. But, I mean, the jumping was just big. And I saw a little snippet of an interview with Freddie where he said, yeah, I got out of the plane. I came here. I knew that this place jumps well, and it happened, you know. So very, very good jumping.
This is the place where Ryan Fitz set the collegiate national jump record back in 1999, Shortline Lake.
Yep.
So
that's correct.
That gives you context. I think he went like 192 or 193, 5'32". So it's pretty good.
Yeah.
It's a good jump.
Yeah. So that ended up with Hanna Streltsova in first with 57.3 or 188. Second for Sasha Danyuskaya with 50.8 or 167 feet. And then Jeanine Bonneman Meckler in third with 49.8 or 163. And that, in the men's side, Ryan Dodd takes the win with 71.3, 234 feet. Second, Freddy Krueger with 71.0, so 1 foot behind with 233. And then in third place, Joel Poland with 69.9 or 229 feet. And that brings us to the leaderboard, the jump leaderboard, presented by John Phillips. Hanna and Freddy maintain their lead. Sasha and Taylor remain second. And then we see a big leap from Janina now in third place with 77 points. And Jack Critchley, who didn't have the best weekend, although the jumps were still pretty big, maintains his third place with 104. We have already covered the Klipschmarine slalom leaderboard before. We forgot about the TWBC ski brand leaderboard in the slalom. So not many changes at the top, with Syndicate leading with 592 points, followed by D3 with 485, and then Good jumped in third place after this weekend with 326 points. MB, I thank you for joining me for this thing.
I got one more thing. I wanted to say it was really good to see.
Sorry.
It was really good to see Igor jumping.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if we need to talk about that, but, you know, it's a weird world, and I think that these athletes should be able to jump and compete no matter, you know, what else is going on. So to see him show up 213 in the prelims, that was cool to me, because I know a lot of athletes are not getting to compete at every level right now because of other people's, you know, mistakes, and it's kind of tragic, so... I just want to say I think it was good to see Igor there jumping.
Yep. No, he's obviously, you know, anytime we get to see people doing what they love is a good thing.
Yep. Mateo, thanks, buddy. Yeah, appreciate it.